For July 17, 2014. On the Ground lifts up voices of activists and activism here in the nation's capital. I'm your host, Esther Rivera. I'm joined in the studio today by Michael Byfield. Well, hundreds of people were on the National Mall on Sunday to oppose expansion of the controversial gas drilling process known as fracking and to oppose construction of a massive export terminal for fracked liquefied natural gas right here in the DMV at Cove Point, Maryland. We'll hear voices from that rally and later hear from activists about the latest attack by Israel against Palestinians. But first, other news making the headlines. Yesterday, the Senate stopped the Protect Women's Health from Corporate Interference Act from moving forward with a vote of 56 to 43. The bill would restore contraceptive coverage guaranteed by the Affordable Care Act that was weakened by the Supreme Court's decision in the Hobby Lobby case last month. The bill, which is also known as the Not My Boss's Business Act, states that the Religious Freedom Restoration Act does not allow employers to refuse to comply with federal law guaranteeing coverage of specific health care. 24 people were arrested Monday after blockading the entrances to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission here in Washington. They were protesting fracking and what they considered to be the agency's rubber stamping of the industry's push to export natural gas. They focus on Cove Point, the liquefied natural gas export terminal proposed by Dominion Resources in Maryland, which the agency is due to issue a final decision on next month. On Sunday, hundreds of people joined a rally and march against Cove Point and the boom in fracking in the United States, which they say imperils health, safety, and the climate. More from the sit-in and from Sunday's rally after headlines. Global experts have submitted a report to the United Nations on how the world's top economies can help avoid climate disaster. The Pathways to Deep Decarbonization project is being billed as the most comprehensive of its kind to outline practical measures to counter climate change. The United Nations will hold a climate change summit in New York in September as part of its negotiations for global agreement by the end of the year. And in other climate change news, the World Council of Churches has become one of the most high-profile group so far to endorse divestment from fossil fuels. The Council's Central Committee has endorsed a proposal that will phase out its holdings in all corporations profiting from carbon dioxide emissions. The World Council of Churches represents 300 churches with more than 500 million members in 150 countries. The group 350.org says that the vote could mark the most important commitment on fossil fuel divestment so far, adding, it opens the doors for churchgoers around the world to encourage their institutions to live up to their values and divest from companies that are destroying the planet and our future. Citigroup has agreed to pay $7 billion to settle a federal probe over its sale of toxic mortgage-backed securities that helped sink the economy and displace millions of people. The deal includes $2.5 billion in relief for those who lost their homes. Eric Holder said Citigroup purposefully hid the risks it knew were associated with the bank loans. Holder said that the bank's activities shattered lives and livelihoods throughout the country and also around the world. The settlement includes a civil penalty of about $4 billion, the largest penalty to date of its kind. But in a statement, the Public Citizen Group called the deal too lenient, noting no criminal charges have been announced. In other economic news, a group of five countries have launched their own development bank to challenge the U.S.-dominated World Bank and International Monetary Fund. Leaders from the so-called BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, unveiled the new development bank at a summit in the Brazilian city of Fortaleza. The bank will be headquartered in Shanghai. Together, BRICS countries account for 25% of global GDP and 40% of the world's population. The trial of four former Blackwater guards accused of massacring 17 Iraqi civilians at Baghdad's Nisour Square is continuing this week with former employees offering an inside account of the killings. One witness described how one of his colleagues shot an unarmed Iraqi who was holding his hands up in an apparent gesture of surrender. The private security firm Blackwater has undergone several renaming and rebranding attempts, most recently merging with former competitor Triple Canopy under the name Constellus Holdings. The United Nations is pulling its staff out of Libya amidst some of the worst violence since U.S.-backed ouster of Muammar Gaddafi in 2011. Heavy fighting involving rival militias has killed at least 15 people since Sunday, and shelling has destroyed 90% of planes at the main airport. Closures of the airport in Tripoli and another in Misrata have effectively cut Libya off from nearly all international flights. Back in this country, in Detroit, Michigan, at least 8 people were arrested last week in an act of civil disobedience to stop the city's shutoff of water to thousands of households. The group of clergy members and other residents blocked the entrance of a private corporation hired by Detroit to cut off the taps of residents who have fallen behind on their water bills by as little as 2 months. A UN panel has called the shutoffs a violation of the human right to water. And finally, in more activism news very close to home, the human rights activist, the Reverend Graylin Hagler, pastor of Plymouth Congregational Church in Northwest D.C., kicked off his campaign on Saturday for an at-large seat on the D.C. City Council. Reverend Hagler said that his campaign is challenging how development is happening in Washington, D.C.
Well, I've decided to run because one is you look at all the economic, so-called economic development that's going on. It's runaway economic development. It is without regard for neighborhoods. It's without regard for history, without regard for the residents who have been in those communities or the infrastructure that has been in those communities like churches and civic associations. It has just been a removal of people because of economic interest at all. Land in Washington, D.C. has become so valuable that your average person cannot afford it. And yet at the same time, people are making money. But it's not the people who live in Washington, D.C. And so it needs to be challenged. This kind of development needs to be challenged. We need to start talking about community development instead.
Hagler held the kickoff at Greenleaf Gardens, a public housing development in southwest D.C. that residents say is being allowed to deteriorate and that is now surrounded by expensive condominiums. Barbara Hines Randolph, who has lived in Greenleaf for 51 years, explained about why she was there to support Hagler's campaign.
The main thing that why I support him is because he has an interest and has told us as well as showed us in every meeting, in every aspect of our walk, that he supports public housing residents. Knowing that we, most of us, are native Washingtonians, irrespective of where we live, we need our public housing, which is affordable to residents of low income. And this is why I believe Reverend Hagler is going to have a voice to address that.
And those are our headlines for today. When we come back, voices from the big march to stop fracking here in the DMV and across the nation. We'll be right back.
This is the new world order, and every drop counts. You can laugh and take it as a joke if you wanna, but it don't rain a full week some summers, and it's about to get real wild in the half. You be buying every yard to take a bath. Heads is acting wild, sipping rum, pumping dank, competing with the next man for higher playing rank. Then I ain't got time, try to be Big Hank. The bank. I need a 20-year water tank, cause while these knuckleheads is out here sweating their guts, the sun is sitting in the treetops, burning the woods, and if the flame from the blaze get higher round higher, they say, don't drink the water, we need it for the fire. New York is drinking it, new world. And all of California is drinking it, new world. Way up north and down south is drinking it, new world. Used to have minerals and sinking it.
That was New World Water by Mos Def. Welcome back to the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. I'm Esther Verum.
And I'm Michael Byfield. On Sunday, about 1,000 people gathered on the National Mall to oppose the expansion of fracking across the United States and construction of a massive export terminal for natural gas at Cove Point, Maryland. Cove Point is one of 20 such export facilities being considered by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and is the only one adjacent to a residential neighborhood. We're going to hear some sounds from Sunday's rally. The first voice you will hear is that of Sherry Feuchtlin, an author and mother of six who works for climate justice in South Louisiana. The second you'll hear is Winona Howder, executive director of Food and Water Watch.
Where I live, there's immense poverty, and they use that in order to sell us on a system that is literally eating us alive and chewing us up and spitting us at the feet of a few rich people. I'm here to help protect you. I don't want to see the rest of the world end up like this. Not in Cove Point, not in any point. Should we be in this position? It's time for President Obama to step up and do something to make the changes that we hoped that he would. Our politicians tell us about jobs, but they don't tell us about the 72 trillion gallons of water and the 360 gallons of chemicals that are used in existing fracking wells right now. They have proprietary issues. They won't tell us what's in. I have trains running through. My little boy's kindergarten is two blocks on the other side of, and I don't know what is in those trains, and they won't tell our fire and rescue workers. So if something did happen where I couldn't get to my little boy, I wouldn't even know what chemicals were in those trains. This industry is exempt from the Safe Water, Drinking Water Act. Thank you, Dick Cheney. Tell you that an independent human ecological risk assessment from 2012 from the air next to these projects found 57 chemicals, 45 of them were potential human health risks. That people that live in those areas are 30% more likely to have babies with birth defects, 25% to have babies with low birth weights. They don't tell you about the eye problems, the skin problems, the respiratory problems, and the nervous system issues next to these projects. It's never okay to poison a child. Can you say it with me? It's never okay to poison a child. Not for money, not for jobs, not for security, not for infrastructure, not for comfort. It is never okay to poison a child. See, that's the thing, is they want to talk about projects and money, but this is about life. It's about all of our lives. This is a moral and spiritual fight, and we need all people of good conscience to stand up, to rise up against the taking of our democracy, the taking of our children, the taking of our air, and the dirtying of our water. And I know the stats that I gave you are scary stuff, but they work in the realm of fear. They say that if we don't have this as an economy base, that we will not survive. They actually think that there's no jobs on a clean and healthy planet. It's crazy. It's never okay to poison a child. We have to start making decisions that are not based on fear, but based in reality of where we are. We have to liberate ourselves from the lies that they feed us. It's never okay to poison a child. It's never okay to destroy a community. Thanks.
Our electoral system is being bought through a system of legalized bribery, and both parties are responsible. But today, I'm going to pick on the Democrats, because we know that Maryland is essentially a one-party state. And we know that President Obama, his administration, has given the green light to both fracking and exports. And hey, let's be realistic. We're going to send gas to Asia and Europe, and that's going to make us energy independent. We know it's about rising the price of gas so that corporate profits can be higher, and it's going to drive up the cost of energy here in the United States. Now, the Obama administration is doing something else sneaky along with their Republican allies. They are negotiating two rotten trade agreements. And one of the goals of these trade agreements is to export LNG. One of the trade agreements is with 12 Pacific Rim countries. It's called the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The other is the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. Let's get it straight. This isn't about commerce. This is about trading away our independence. It's about letting the energy corporations make money. And now, There are leaked documents that show that corporations will be able to sue our federal, our state, and our local governments if they say that local jurisdictions, by enacting laws to protect their citizens, take away corporate profits. And to make it worse, there's now legislation in Congress to fast-track these outrageous, undemocratic trade bills. Tell your member of Congress, vote against fast-track. Now, I'm going to save my last words for Governor O'Malley. We know Governor O'Malley is another Democrat angling to be president. And we know that Governor O'Malley once said that the most sacred role of government is to protect the citizens from danger. So we know that rightfully, Governor O'Malley in 2007 opposed the Sparrow Point LNG facility, like he should have. Where is he for the citizens of Calvert County? We demand that he do a quantitative risk assessment. You will see that there are petitions, green cards circulating. Please sign one of those today. Or get out your cell phones and text Cove Point to 69866. 69866. It's time to hold both parties accountable. Let's stop Cove Point. Let's ban fracking now. Let's get money out of politics. Let's put our voices together. The people united will never be defeated. The people united will never be defeated. The people united will never be defeated. Thank you.
You're listening to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment. I'm your host, Esther Averam.
And I'm Michael Byfield.
And we're listening to voices from this week's rally against fracking and climate change on the National Mall. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. We're listening to voices from the big march last Sunday to oppose expansion of fracking in the U.S. and the export terminal in Cove Point. Up next is Tim DeChristopher, an activist who spent 21 months in jail for bidding on public land to keep it out of the hands of the oil and gas industries. He is followed by the Reverend Lennox Yearwood, Jr., CEO of the Hip Hop Caucus.
Since I think it's fitting that we're here suffering in this heat today, because we're showing that this movement is going to have to get a little tougher. So we're here in the heat today, getting a little tougher, especially for us bald guys. We're toughening up a little bit, and we're going to need that for our future. And I think it's fitting that we're right here in Washington, in front of the Capitol, because in addition to getting tougher and smarter as a movement, we're going to have to start building some real political power. That's ultimately what this comes down to. This is not just about natural gas power versus clean energy power. We know where we stand on that. We need a change in political power just as much as we need a change in electrical power. And when we're serious about that, we have to acknowledge that political power for a social movement is antithetical to party loyalty. They can't possibly go together. We can't have party loyalty if we're going to get real political power for this movement. And when we get political power as a movement, it's going to be because we take people out of office. And that's what we're going to have to start doing. We're going to have to start taking some people out of office. That's what it's going to take. It's been clear. We've had marches before. We've had people go to prison before. And still, Washington isn't taking our interests seriously. And so we're going to have to make sure some of the people in that building lose their jobs. We're going to have to make sure that when fossil fuel-friendly Democrats lose this November, everybody knows that it's because they refuse to stand up for a livable climate. Everybody knows that it's because they took too much money from the fossil fuel industry and refused to put our interests above those of the profits of the fossil fuel industry. That's the message we're here sending today, and we're going to keep sending that. We're part of a much bigger movement. This is just one step here today, and we're going to keep building it back in our neighborhoods. Thank you for joining me in this battle. Let's keep it going.
Y'all ready to march? Are y'all ready to go? Are y'all ready to march? Are y'all ready to go? So, the good news for me is that I am the last speaker before you march. So somebody make some noise! So, and I'm actually gonna cut it down because I think at this point in time, we know what we need to do. But I just want to make two points to what we need to express. The first point is this. Today we are going to commission a statue for the climate change movement right now. So behind me, on the top of the U.S. Capitol, is a statue called Freedom. Today we take that statue today to say that statue of freedom means freedom from fossil fuels right now. So every time we come to D.C. and we see that statue on top of the U.S. Capitol, no matter who's in there, Democrat or Republican, that means freedom from fossil fuels and freedom right now. The second thing is this. And the serious part of this, I have been blessed to be working with President Obama on a number of climate change issues. No, thank you. In 2009, I was asked by the White House to launch the first green campaign called Green the Block to get out green jobs. After that, some of you came and said, Rev, we need to stop the Keystone XL pipeline. Now, the one thing I will say for a coming movement, y'all picked really tough times to be outside. It was about 5 degrees below on that day, about 100 degrees today. We let folks know when the climate is bad, things are worse. So when we came with a four-door climate rally, and my friend Van Jones told me that it was a done deal in the White House. Guess what? KXL is no longer a done deal because of what you did in the streets. The next thing the White House called and said, Rev, we need you to come here because we need to stop and put a cap on the carbon pollution that is emitted by power plants and coal-fired power plants. And we have been gathering around, and that will be our next journey, because we know these coal power plants cause the greatest emissions around, and we must stop that nonsense, that pollution in our community, and stop it right now. But this is the thing, though, and I say this to my brother Barack Obama, our president, that if we allow and stop the KXL,
and we stop the pollution coming out of power plants. But if we allow liquid natural gas, LNG, to be exported to Asia, to be put in Cove Point, to be fracked all around this country, then really we are defeating our purpose. And I ask our president right now, we march to FERC and we tell them that you can't be a lapdog. We say that this must change now. And this is why. Many of you have heard me say numerous times that, you know, I'm so blessed to be a reverend in this movement now. And I'm so blessed because in the 20th century, Dr. King fought for equality. But I'm so more excited that we are now fighting for existence in the 21st century. And this is our Birmingham. And this is our Montgomery. And so the difference here, I would tell President Obama, say that what if they would have said that, well, yes, we'll get rid of the white and black water fountains, but we'll keep the white and black hotels. So we'll keep this part of segregation, but we'll get rid of that. You can't do that. When you reach for equality, you have to get rid of all the injustice. Well, we're here right now. You can't keep coal, and you can't keep gas, and you can't keep this or that that causes fossil fuel pollution. Get rid of it all, and get rid of it all right now. And so when we march today, so the report asked me, is marching still worthwhile? That's what I said. And they said, does it matter? This is the thing, though. And I need all those. I know there's some sound things in the back over there. You might not be able to hear me as well, but I need you to see what I see for this as we get ready to march. Because I see the slingshot. And I see the parable about David and Goliath. And I'm so glad that we're out here with black and white and brown and yellow and male and female, and straight, and gay, and theist, and atheist, and Muslim, and Christian, humanity fighting for the next generation. But when I look out here, and I see you, what I see is Goliath. I don't see David. I see Goliath. I see the people united. I see us come together in this country, around the world, to say no to fossil fuels and say yes to clean energy. What I see is the true Goliath right now. And so as we march to FERC, and days become hard and rough, and sometimes you don't see the transition, know that at some point in time, the next generation, maybe in 2114 or beyond that, they will see this tape, and they will look back on this hot July day, and they will say, those were the ones who fought for us to exist. Power to the people! 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 Stop Grove Point! 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 Stop Gold Point! Stop Gold Point! Let's go get them.
You've been listening to voices from Sunday's rally on the National Mall to oppose the expansion of fracking and to oppose construction of export terminals for liquefied natural gas around the country, including right here in the DMV on the Chesapeake Bay. When we come back, we're going to shift our discussion to Israel's latest attack on Palestinians, and you're invited to call in at 202-588-0893. Michael will stay on to take your calls and speak to our guests from the D.C. Metro chapter of Jewish Voices for Peace. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
مثلي بطلنا سوا وبطل الهوى يجي ع سوا وانخلقت مشكلي بطل الكلام يقدر يمحي الألم.
And welcome back to Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment, the underground edition where we lift up voices of social justice and activism. During the first half of the show, we heard voices from Sunday's rally on the mall and march against the expansion of fracking in our country. And now we're going to turn our attention to Israel's latest assault on the people of Palestine. A momentary pause in hostilities is underway in the Gaza Strip this morning as a six-hour ceasefire requested by the United Nations allowed Palestinians a brief window to move about freely and gather much-needed supplies after more than 9 days of heavy bombardment by Israeli forces. Pause in fighting comes a day after four Palestinian children were killed by Israeli shelling on a beach in Gaza City, bringing the number of Palestinians killed to at least 225 people, with more than 1,500 wounded. Most of those impacted have been civilians. On the Israeli side, one man was killed on Tuesday as he visited troops near the border after being struck by a shrapnel from a rocket launched from Gaza. Joining me in the studio is Seth Morrison, a member of the Metro DC chapter of Jewish Voices for Peace, which just held a die-in in front of the White House on Monday, and have held recent other events, including a pre-Mother's Day event to discourage shoppers from buying their mothers a SodaStream gadget, which is manufactured illegally occupied Palestinian land. It's also your turn to call in. The number to call is 202-588 to comment on Israel's ongoing siege of Palestine. Seth, yesterday your group held a die-in at the White House to protest the murder of Palestinians. You posted on Facebook, quote, with over 200 Palestinians murdered in Gaza and over 1,200 injured. We must stand in solidarity with Gaza and hold the U.S. government accountable for providing the Israeli government $3.1 billion annually. Please come out to the White House at 6 p.m. to show your support of Gaza. Does JVP represent a friend of the Jewish community to more openly critical of Israeli and its enablers, the United States?
Well, thank you for having me today. I really appreciate it. First of all, I should clarify that the die-in at the White House yesterday was put together by a variety of groups, JVP being one of them. There are a number of different organizations in the D.C. area and in the country that are protesting the occupation overall, as well as this specific attack on Gaza. You know, unfortunately, there's a tremendous amount of propaganda put out by Israel and put out by the American Jewish community that somehow if you criticize Israel, you're anti-Semitic and anti-Israel. Yet, you know, in America, our tradition is freedom. You know, many of us voted for Barack Obama, but as we heard in the previous segment, we also are willing to criticize him. We voted for our members of Congress, or maybe it's somebody from the party we didn't vote for. But either way, we stand up and we speak out for what we believe, and nobody says we're anti-American. You know, it almost reminds me of protesting the Vietnam War when it, you know, people said if you protested Vietnam, you should love it or love the U.S. or leave it. So we're Jews. You know, the majority of members of Jewish Voice for Peace are Jewish. We believe that the state of Israel is not acting according to Jewish tradition, that the oppression and occupation of Palestinians is wrong. And we believe that the best thing we can do for our Jewish community and for our Jewish brethren and sisters is to stand up for your human rights and for Palestinian rights.
Do you think you're able to make a different impact on Jews who are critical of both Israel and the United States?
I think we are making an impact. You know, we're growing steadily. JVP has over 140,000 supporters in the U.S. We're growing constantly at a time when many of the so-called traditional or mainstream Jewish groups are declining. You know, it's hard to say how much Facebook means or doesn't mean, but you look at the number of likes of the JVP Facebook pages, and it's higher than AIPAC and higher than J Street. You know, people, I think, are realizing that the occupation is the root cause of the violence, and we're hearing it definitely, you know, in the last couple of weeks as these horrors have increased, that more and more people are willing to speak out and say this is wrong.
Your own video that you have produced, which is quite good, by the way, details how Palestinian people have been systematically and ethnically cleansed from their own land. What does JVP offer as a solution?
We believe that the solution will come, first of all, when the Palestinians are fully recognized and are able to negotiate on equal level with the Israelis. And that when they come together on an equal level, that they will be able to work out the solution that is best for the people of the region. I mean, there are some who advocate the one-state solution, some who advocate a two-state solution. What JVP focuses on is the people and the voice of the people deciding what they want.
Tell me, what kind of reaction have you received from passersby to your event, for example, the SodaStream event before Mother's Day, why is it important for you to do direct actions?
Sure. Well, our SodaStream events in D.C. are monthly. So while we did one Mother's Day, we did one in June, we did one last week. And we find a variety of things, but very often people just haven't heard of the SodaStream issue specifically, and so they ask questions, they take our literature, and many of them end up agreeing with us.
Hello.
Yes. Hello.
Please tell me your name and where you're calling from.
Okay. My name is Tehudi Ani Patel Hotep, calling from Alexandria, Virginia. I'd like to say Hotep to you, your guests, and the PFW listening audience.
Hotep Tehudi, good morning. What is your comment?
My comment is that this monstrous, inhumane, genocidal ethnic cleaning that is going on by the Israeli government, which are nothing but Zionist Nazis, these people are not a part of what Judaism is all about. As a matter of fact, this same systematic cleansing of the land of its original people is the same operation that was done to indigenous black people here in America by this country here that is supporting Israel with all of the hard-earned tax dollars that America are being drained of by this government to keep this monstrous systematic murdering and ethnic cleansing going. It's a genocidal system that must be taken down. I'm surprised that there's not enough people involved in protesting against this thing to the government right now, and America should be shut down. And what we saw with Mariah or Miriam Carey in downtown Washington, D.C., when the government was shut down, President Obama had the last word on what to do with this black woman. He could have told the police and the Secret Service agents to stand down and allow this woman to get to the destination where they could take her alive. He had this last word. The last word for him was to murder this woman, just like the last word for him is to murder these children in Palestine. It's amazing how many people still support this racist, murderous government disguising itself as, you know, a people on this planet. It's amazing. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit emotional, but this death and destruction is not only in Palestine. It's in the black communities in the large cities. It's also in Africa, been going on now for the longest, and we've heard no outcry of that. So it's just these governments that are at war with the people. And so they want to replace us now with the technology because they got clones and robots now to do the work that people used to do. So they're poisoning us to death with genetically modified food. They're spraying all kind of chemicals in the atmosphere to eliminate and reduce the population on the planet so that they can get to a number that is controllable. And it's a shame and a disgrace, and I think that everybody ought to understand now that we should separate ourselves from these devils and set up our own systems of survival and get ready for a final showdown.
Thank you for your comment. Thank you for your passion, Tuyuti.
Yes, and, you know, I think the bottom line of this is that the American people need to speak out. There are more and more people who I talk to personally, who my JVP friends and colleagues talk to, who are realizing that the occupation of the West Bank and of Gaza is indeed the root cause of these problems. And the only way that's going to be solved is when we really recognize the rights of the Palestinian people and when Israel finally starts negotiating with them in good faith.
Caller?
Yeah, is it me?
Your name, please?
Okay, it's Star. I'm calling. Thank you for taking up this subject. I really think that some of the things that your guest is saying are rather misleading. And Israel has no right to negotiate. It's Palestinian land. And I think that because, you know, we are not given that understanding by some of the groups like Jewish Voices for Peace here, and this is part of the reason we're a stalemate, or not a stalemate, but we've never really been able to launch a movement that was anywhere near equivalent to the movement that supported the ANC in South Africa. And that's these piecemeal boycotts of only the products which are produced in Israeli settlements in occupied Palestine isn't going to do the trick. I mean, we need full-on sanctions and a permanent cessation of funding. One of the things that I think I'd just like to hear a comment from your guest about is the fact that there is a embargo on any news in the United States, or very little news is let through about the racism towards African refugees. In Israel. This has an impact on the consciousness of Americans because groups like Birthright Israel are sending Jewish people over to Israel to claim Israel as their birthright and to become familiar with it. And about 80% of the population is engaged in fairly rabid racism against Africans as well as Palestinians. There's a young Israeli named David Sheen who in March made a tour of the country. He gave a presentation that was covered in part by Nesta Freeman in a really excellent show. And what he pointed out is that the stereotyping of the African refugees has a component of this kind of rabid sexualization of the black African wanting to go after the Israeli female, and she's just going to be enthralled by his hypersexuality. And that will in turn pollute the population because of interbreeding. I mean, it's stuff you can scarcely believe unless you're familiar with the 1950s and 60s in the U.S. and some of the attitudes that are still in the U.S. All of this needs to be exposed. When David Sheen, who is Israeli, and that's his website is davidshen.com, when he tried to, when he gave a presentation to the New York Times and I think another, it might have been NPR, I think it was NPR, in New York, they said flat out they wouldn't cover it. And there's just massive things that could be done in terms of raising consciousness that aren't being done. Things like SodaStream products, Caterpillar tractors, these are not everyday items that people buy. They're not effective items for a boycott focus. The Israeli embassy is going all over town, co-sponsoring children's programs and everything else. There's no public attempt to really do anything about that. And when you form, you put your primary energies into forming groups where it's Jewish and Palestinians for Peace or whatever, right away the rest of us are going to feel excluded. You're not trying through broadly based anti-war coalitions to raise these issues. In fact, United for Peace and Justice, the anti-war coalition steadfastly refused in the early 90s to raise the Palestinian issue. So I'm sorry. These groups do a good job describing the conditions of the occupation, but the root of the problem is not the occupation. The root of the problem is the conquest with imperialist help of Palestinian land by the Israelis. And that's the root of the problem. Zionism is a form of racism. You can't have a Jewish state on Palestinian land. Thank you.
Thank you.
A lot of points there. And, you know, a very understandable concern because the situation there is horrible. You know, it is funny, I guess, if anything can be funny in this horrible situation, that in some cases, JVP is criticized because we're too critical of Israel, and then others, as in this caller, saying not critical enough. I think the important point is that when more Americans stand up and really exercise that right to be critical of Israel and to be critical of the United States, that that's when things will change. I also want to agree with the caller on one issue, which many people here have not heard about, which is of the African refugees. There are serious problems we know throughout Africa, and there are, just as there are in South America, more and more people are seeking to escape from violence and escape from poverty and come to the U.S. There are people in North Africa who are trying to escape, and they're finding their way through various North African countries, through Egypt, and they make their way to Israel. And Israel is basically interning them and is trying to send them back to other countries. And, you know, for a country that, or for a people that was persecuted for thousands of years, and we're ourselves refugees, to know that the Israeli government, trying to act in the name of the Jewish people, has refused to deal fairly and openly with these refugees who are in the same position is horrible. And I definitely agree with the caller how unfortunate it is that there's so little media coverage of this issue in the United States.
I also want to add to that, and maybe Damar Seth can elaborate on this. President Carter was one of the more prominent figures to bring this to the consciousness, where he referred to the Israeli system as similar or even more extreme than the apartheid system by the former Republic of South Africa.
Yes, and you know, we all heard the tremendous backlash against President Carter for speaking the truth. You know, as a Jew, it hurts me. And for, frankly, I resisted the use of the term. But as I got to know more Palestinians, as I traveled in the region, as I went through checkpoints, you know, everything I've read about apartheid explains what I saw personally and what my friends experienced. And, you know, if you don't label it what it is, then you can't fight it. And so as much as it hurts many of us to hear that term, it reflects the situation and, you know, we have to confront it.
Okay, we're going to go to another caller. Caller.
Yes, sir. How are you?
Excellent. And yourself?
Oh, good.
Your name, please?
I'm Reverend Docky Napata. And I'm a veteran in organizing. I worked on the anti-apartheid movement. Nuclear freeze, you name it. I've been a part of it. And so what I wanted to say was, that first of all, thank you, PFW, for having this type of honest discussion. An honest dialogue, and not have it censored, that is so important. One of the things I just wanted to say is I remember doing the anti-apartheid movement. I worked for the American Friends and Service Committee, the Quaker, and we did all kinds of coalitions and alliances as we addressed apartheid with allies all over the world to bring an end to that. demonic regime. And one of the things we always will remind you of is Dr. King's call to conscience and action. And what he would do is put out a comprehensive statement and have co-signatories to it, whether it be churches and rabbis or Rabbi Abraham Herschel, just a whole range of people, laborers, students, artists, you name it. And with that call to conscience to make us aware of what was going on, whatever the venue was, then there was a call to conscience and action. And I would encourage us in this day and time, we have alliances, we have coalitions, that when we see this type of violation of human rights, and all life is sacred, whether it's Jewish or Palestinian or the like, you know, African, you know, or American, you know, all life is sacred. And so what I'm saying is I'm suggesting where we might need to get back to that type of comprehensive alliance. So as we speak about the people in North Africa, and that's where Israel is and Palestine is, and we speak about those people who are peopling those places, I was so glad to hear your guests talk about those people having the right to self-determination. And even as we push the type of nonviolent solutions as we did in the South Africa anti-apartheid movement, it was no question that even Kenneth Kaunda, who was the president of Zambia, who had taken a stand of nonviolence for many years, he wrote a book called The Riddle of Violence. And what he said was, after looking at the children of Soweto on June 16, 1976, throwing stones at hippos, you know, machine gun tanks, and being slaughtered in the street, and then he changed his perspective from being nonviolent to saying that violence was an act of love in that type of condition. Now, what I'm saying is this, and I'll stop. It is very important, in my opinion, that we have other people from an organizational capacity own that struggle and not segregate our struggles, you know, because whether we're talking about the people in the Congo or the people in Guatemala or the people in Israel, you know, Palestinian and Jewish, and the Americans of different viewpoints here, it is important for us to put that call out again, for us to come together in an act of conscience, not to create a new organization, but an alliance, so that we can be about comprehensive, unified principles, strategies, and action. And so thank you so much for hearing me. I think that it is no question that this problem is solvable. We had a Jewish rabbi out of South Africa that joined with a brother named Sipho Mphemela, you know, who took a strong stand against the anti-apartheid, the South African government, and his Jewish friends and worshipers, saying to be really Jewish meant A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and not to be supporting the type of domination that we see in South Africa. So the same thing is true, obviously, the people that are in your movement, your organization, but we have to multiply that and make sure the children are engaged and leading us. So thank you for listening to me. I'm clearly certain that this thing is resolvable once we broaden the coalition and once we identify strategic actions that can make a difference in Israel, I mean, in Palestine as well as in America.
Thank you so much.
Yes, and Reverend, I do thank you as well. And I want to add that Jewish Voice for Peace is circulating an open letter to the Israeli people demanding an end to the violence. I hope that people will go on our website and sign that. Also want to say that it has been heartwarming that many of the events, the one at the White House yesterday, one's coming up on Sunday, coming up on August 2nd, have been put together by coalitions, that there are more and more organizations coming together to really fight this violence. And it makes it very heartwarming to live and work in D.C. and know that that's happening.
Okay, we're going to wrap it up. I want to thank our guest, Seth Morrison from Jewish Voices for Peace, and that will do it for me on the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment. I'm Michael Byfield, sitting in the second half of the show for Esther Ivarim. Special thanks to Mike Nathrella, our engineer, and thank you so much for listening and calling. You can reach the show at ontheground.show.org, where you can now listen to all our past shows, and you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter and at the On the Ground Show. Stay tuned for Askia Mohammed and the news, followed by Krista Property and Don't Forget the Blues. Aluta Continua.